Welcome back to Creative Therapy Umbrella. This is a place where we talk about all different types of creative arts therapies, expressive therapies, and creative approaches to therapy. My name is Kate Shannon. I'm a licensed clinical professional counselor and a board-certified music therapist. I'm really pumped about today's episode. Relationship and attachment theory is something I really value bringing into my practice. And Elizabeth, she just has such wonderful insight and tips on how to thoughtfully bring this into your approach as a therapist who works with children, and really how any therapist who works with children or any therapist in general can be bringing these concepts into the therapy room. So Elizabeth Gillette is a licensed clinical social worker, and she is an attachment specialist and educator who supports folks in developing healthier relationships, a deeper awareness of their needs and behaviors, and more connections in their partnerships. Her private practice is called Heirloom Counseling, and she offers therapy, online courses, interactive tools, and all of those things are really focused on helping heal ourselves and each other and experience more joy and security in relationships. I found Elizabeth through her podcast, which is really awesome, Here to Heal, and I'll make sure to have a link in that in the show notes. But she has online courses, support bundles, her podcast, and a beautiful website as well with some really great resources on her blog. So in today's episode, Elizabeth and I dig into the importance of understanding attachment and relationship as well. And we talk a little bit about attachment at the beginning and how our early relationships matter so much in our development, and then what that looks like into adulthood, and then what do we do with that relationship in therapy? How do we be in therapy? How do we attune to clients in the sessions? What are some things that we can do to attune with our clients? How do we keep in check some of our own things that come up if we know our own attachment style, how that can get in our way as a therapist? So we dig into some really nitty-gritty stuff here that's so wonderful that I think is important for any therapist to know in the work that they do, because at the end of the day, we're working with humans, we're working with people, and we are working within a relationship. We can't exist as therapists if we're not working in a relationship. There's always other. And so being able to understand the self as it as we engage with other, and how the other engages with self and back and forth, and also knowing that experience on the other end for someone is really powerful. So I'm really excited that this episode is coming off of number 78, which is all about how to be, because they're just like peanut butter and jelly in, I think, complementing each other. So take a listen to this episode and enjoy. All right, Elizabeth, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here and chat with you today.
Likewise. I know we can already probably record 5 episodes, but I'm really excited for this episode and what we're going to get into today.
Me too.
Yes. Well, for our listeners, can you tell us a little bit about what you specialize in?
Absolutely. So my specialty is attachment work. So that's really rooted in attachment theory, attachment styles. Lots of people have heard at least a little bit about what those things are. We talk about, you know, secure attachment, anxious attachment, avoidant attachment, disorganized attachment. And really what we're talking about is a relational pattern that begins in infancy. So it starts from the very, very beginning, our very first interactions with our caregivers. And what I love about attachment work is that it can actually change and shift over our lifespan. With awareness and with practice and with work, we can shift that. So if we ended up in a family where maybe we didn't have the best types of interactions, or we didn't get the care or love that we really needed, we are able to, in our adult lives, to really shift and focus on gaining more secure attachment. So that is really that's what I specialize in. And it's so wonderful to see people being able to discover more joy in their relationships and feel more confident in who they are. So I'm super passionate about this work.
Yes. And it sounds like incredibly fulfilling work. Like I think being a therapist is, but when you are really seeing that change within relationship, that just feels so powerful.
It is, especially because, I mean, when you think about it, relationships are so central to our lives and to our well-being. I mean, it actually, you know, having solid, healthy relationships actually changes how we feel in our bodies, right? It changes how excited we are about living our lives, and it changes how we feel about being in the world. And so I think that anything that we can do to improve those relationships and really optimize how we communicate with each other is it's incredible work. Like, it's very worthwhile.
Yes. Yes. And the thought too of, you know, how it changes, I feel like I definitely had a misconception when I first like way back heard, oh, attachment theory. And it's these four kind of styles. And then I remember being like, oh no, is it like it's fixed? And then you're just stuck with that. Like, that's not fun. And mm-hmm. then it seems like that is kind of a common misconception of that. It's, oh, this is kind of what you're stuck with, and you know, it doesn't quite change. But it's so awesome to hear of how much it's actually malleable and it can change.
Yes, definitely. And I think too, the other misconception I think that happens is that we only have one attachment style, and it's just not true. You know, like I really, I've studied a lot of Diane Poole Heller's work, and she really talks about it as being sort of like a pie. Right. And so we all have different size slices of the different attachment styles. And so we can really, you know, be primarily secure, which is kind of what we're all working towards. But then depending on the relationships that we're in, whether that's a partnership or a friendship or a family relationship, different aspects of our attachment styles can appear. And so I think it's really important to recognize that we all have work to do, regardless of how we grew up or regardless of how, you know, solid our sort of like early life foundation was. We all have different ways that we can improve how we relate to each other. So it's good work for all of us to be focusing on.
Yes. And I feel like you said, foundational. I mean, if everything that happens is within relationship, and even if it's the relationship to ourselves and we're surrounded by a relationship, then that just feels like a primary foundational element that has to be a part of almost every therapy. I feel like it could be every therapy that could be a part of.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that bringing attachment work, regardless of what type of therapist you are, bringing some knowledge and understanding of attachment work, I think can really inform and change your practice. And it applies to every single client that we work with, right? Because yes, all of us grew up in a family or caregiver type of situation. And so we all have different ways that we can be healing.
Yes. Yes. I love that. So what are some important things for therapists to know, especially like early relational histories or early attachment styles? What is important for clinicians to like assess or know about that when they are working with a client?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the things I really think about is gaining a deeper understanding of what that person's experience was as they were growing up. So not necessarily like the objective kind of experience of like they grew up in this place and they had, you know, they moved at this age, but more like, what did that client feel? What does that client feel about their family? And what does that client feel about their experience? Because again, it's really like, it's tuning in to how that person has experienced the world, right? Like that to me is one of the critical aspects of attachment work. And so I think the other part of this too is gaining a deeper understanding of the why of people's behaviors. So when we get a deeper understanding of someone's attachment style, it helps us learn the background, the context for that person's experience. Mm-hmm. And if they grew up in a family where their needs were not met consistently, and here they are in a, you know, in their childhood or even in adulthood, and they're being responded to inconsistently, how deeply triggering that can feel for them, right? And those behaviors that accompany those triggers, they might seem sort of I guess a therapy word would be like maladaptive, right? Or like they're not helpful in this moment, but they were at the time, right? Mm-hmm. So understanding where that person came from gives us a much better picture, right? A much clearer picture for what they're going through now and why it's feeling, why something is feeling so overwhelming or triggering for them in this moment.
Yes. And that, I love that reframing of the, you know, maladaptive kind of things of like, this makes sense in context of that this helped somebody and got them through what they needed to get through at that time, and or even currently, and understanding how that all kind of connects within the relationship is so powerful.
Yes. And I think too, like, even going off of that, and maybe this is a little bit of a tangent, but I think that when we're really looking at attachment work, we're getting a sense of how safe a person feels in the world, right? Because those early relationships shape our sense of safety. If we're responded to consistently, if we feel like our needs are met, if we feel like our caregivers are, you know, responding when we cry out, if we feel like they're able to attune to our needs, even though we're not able to, you know, speak them, you know, when we think about the attachment system, it's mostly built before the age of 18 months, right? Which is like, it's wild when you think about that. And again, it's very flexible. It's something that can be changed. But so much of that is happening when we're not even able to communicate yet. So it can feel like a lot of pressure too. Like, I'm a new parent. I have a 1-year-old. So when I think about attachment work as an attachment specialist, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's so much pressure. You know, like I have to do
a year and a half
right.
All. Yeah. I have to get it all in right now.
Yes, it's so not true. And there's no such thing as a perfect parent or a perfect caregiver. Mm-hmm. And we're not looking for that, right? Like, we're just talking about doing your best as much as you can. Mm-hmm. And, you know, focusing on how can I help someone feel safe, right? And that's true as a clinician or as a parent. How can I help this person feel safe and like they're seen and heard and appreciated? I really feel like that's what attachment work is at the root.
Yes, yes. And that safety too of, you know, if they're not safe, what happens when someone doesn't feel safe? You know, like that's when all of those maladaptive things come out, is when that safety isn't there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yes. That's exactly right.
Yes. Oh, I love that. And it's so, it's interesting too, to hear of like how much that does happen in the first year and a half of like that time is critical, you know, not the end all be all, but it is critical, it sounds like, to that attachment process.
Yes, definitely. And again, it's one of those things where I feel like if you are a person who's listening to this and you're like, oh my gosh, the first year and a half of my life was super stressful, or there was so much going on in my family, or there was, you know, like, I do think it's really important to know that we don't need to have a perfect life to have secure attachment. And really, I mean, a lot of the research is showing that we really only need to be attuned and meeting needs 30% of the time. I don't know if you've heard that statistic, but it's kind of mind-blowing in that way, because I think a lot of people hear that and they're like, only 30%? I definitely am doing 30%. And you are, you know, and you're probably doing way more than that. So I always, you know, I talk to parents and caregivers about that a lot, and just recognizing that there are going to be times where we miss each other. There are going to be times where we think that someone needs this, but they actually need something else. And we need to just give ourselves lots and lots of compassion. And, you know, repair is another critical attachment word, you know, and coming back to it and saying, I really missed you on that earlier, and I'm so sorry, and I'm here, and let's figure this out together.
Yes. Can you tell us a little bit more about that rupture versus repair, and like how that is an opportunity, not necessarily, you know, if it's 70, 50, whatever percentage, what do we do with the times we do miss and we realize it?
Yes. Oh, I love that question, because repair is one of my very favorite concepts when it comes to attachment work. Because again, it's really focusing on the fact that we are all human and we're imperfect and we're going to do things wrong sometimes. We're going to get it wrong and we're going to miss each other. So when we talk about attachment rupture, that's basically that moment where you know, whether it's your child or your partner and you're seeing them and you sort of have an internal response to what's going on for them, right? If someone is crying and you're saying, oh, they must be sad because this thing happened, but really they're crying because they're angry, right? And they're frustrated with you. And if you respond to them as if they're sad, they're in their own experience, they're probably gonna be like, what are they doing? Like, they don't get me, right? It's that moment of like, oh, this person is not getting me. And so once we're able to understand what happened, we can go back and say, okay, I totally missed you there, right? And it's a moment of vulnerability because we have to really admit that we don't always know what we're doing, and that's okay. Yeah. And, yes. You know, go back and say, I missed you. Can you help me understand what just happened? And we basically get a do-over. And that repair moment is so critical for our relationships because we're essentially saying, you know, this, you are so important to me that I want to come back and fix this with you. And I want to do this differently next time.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That opportunity to come back and like, it's like just tying it together so much stronger instead of, you know, thinking, I love the way that you put it of, you know, from someone else's point of view of like, wow, you don't hear me or you don't get me, or, and then that stays there until we repair it. You know, the thought of that staying there is like aches, you know, to think that someone might still think that. So like, it makes that idea of being vulnerable to repair so much easier of like, we don't want someone to continually think that. And it's so much more worth it to take that opportunity to repair.
Yes. Oh, it definitely is. And it's one of those things too, where I think especially with children, right, where we can come back and there is something so valuable about apologizing.
Oh my gosh.
Right.
Yes.
And saying, I mean, it's just, kids don't get apologized to very often. I think it's just, there's so much meaning in that to be able to come back and say, I am so sorry that I responded that way. I was feeling really, really upset, and I want to talk about this with you, and I really want to make sure I don't do that next time, you know, and to be, I think that repair is really an opportunity to see that other person, you know, and meet them where they are and say, tell me about what you need right now. So it's a very human moment. And again, so important for that attachment work.
Yes. It's especially like you said, with children, I think of this one client in particular that I apologized to because there was a moment where like, oh, I totally missed that. And it was the first time that that had happened. And I was like, you know, I'm really sorry for missing this thing. And she looked at me like I had like five eyes, like what? Like she was so confused. And then it opened up even more of a great conversation of like, I don't know if adults apologize that much and like go it. So like not only repairing, but then it just ended up being this really beautiful moment of talking about what apologies feel like and when they wanted to hear one and there wasn't one. And, you know, yes, just this beautiful work that came from that one repair opportunity.
Oh my goodness. That is so beautiful. And I just think about how meaningful that had to have been for that child, right? Yes. To even be able to have that dialogue with you. And again, to feel like we're on a more even playing field with each other. Because when we talk about, you know, adult and child interactions, there really is that power differential. And I think that anytime we can offer a repair moment, it's bringing us into a more even playing field. And I think that that feels so good and it builds trust, right? Because now, you know, like that client has the opportunity to experience that again, potentially, or like, you know, be able to say like, this is a moment where you really hurt me.
Yeah.
You know, like, and that to me, it opens up this whole new dialogue and this opportunity. So that is so lovely.
Absolutely. Yes, it does so, so much. And I know I felt at that time, I was like, I'm apologizing for like, it was like the best thing ever. And I was like, this is just so great. Like this was the best situation that could come from it. Yes. But I also love what you said about how with adults, like we can have that child, you know, parent, child, therapist, or whoever it is, like as the adult and the child, there's that power differential. And I think sometimes there is a fear of bringing that differential down to like a, more even playing field. What are your thoughts on that and how that does flow into attachment?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I understand that feeling, right? Like if you're a parent and, you know, you have this belief, we'll call it a belief, right? That you're in control of what is happening. Because I think really that's kind of what we're coming to terms with, is that we're really not in control. Mm-hmm. And this kind of moves, it sort of flows into this whole concept of, you know, respectful parenting and, you know, like there's, you know, we can talk about circle of security and all these other, these different models, right? But this understanding that the more real and transparent and honest we are as, you know, parents or adults in relationships with children, the more that we're modeling for them how they can show up that way in their own lives. And I think that when we do show that we are vulnerable, right? And we do show, and that's of course not saying like we're opening the floodgates and giving them every single, you know, like we do that with boundaries. We do that with really healthy boundaries. But I think that it does really allow children to see all the different ways that we can show up and be fully human and be vulnerable and be real with each other, and how valuable that is to being in healthy relationship with other people.
Yes. Oh, that's so beautifully said, of like the importance of that. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So as a clinician, what are some ways that, you know, how do we go about kind of fostering that space for clients to heal within the relationship in our therapy rooms?
Mm-hmm. This is so important, because I think that when we are in school, right, and we're doing all this learning and we're kind of learning about these different aspects of engaging in interventions with clients and, you know, being able to, I really think we learn that we're supposed to be able to fix the problem. Mm-hmm. And when I think about attachment work in the therapy room, so much of it, and I'm not even going to quote a statistic because I know that most statistics are like made up, right? I'm not even going to quote it. But so much of our therapeutic work is based in the relationship, right? And how well we're showing up in the relationship with our clients, and whether or not they are feeling seen and heard and welcomed and appreciated, right? Like being human and being real with them is just as important, and I would say more important even, than the interventions that we're bringing to the therapy room. So when I think about that, you know, when we talk about secure attachment and what we're going for with secure attachment, we're talking about things like consistency, reliability, you know, being present, being emotionally present and emotionally available. And I think another one too is really delighting in our clients, right? Like it's, you know, saying things like, I am so happy to see you today, right? And meaning it, you know, like, I am so glad that we're here together. I'm so glad that you shared that with me. I really appreciate that you were so open. You know, like those are relational statements. And they help clients feel more welcomed and appreciated. And I think that those are critical, that real like connecting human to human, like you are no different than your client, right? Yes. Like you're just bringing a different perspective for them to support them in their healing work.
Yes. And like even hearing that, like as you were saying, you know, it's so nice to see you, and thinking about being an adult. And if someone said that every time that I saw them, and not like, I think that difference too, of how you kind of you touched on that, of it's not just saying it of like, oh, great to see you, but like, it is really great to see you. That feeling that you get on the other side of that phrase is just like, oh, you know, like it immediately tugs on your heartstrings. And I think that's the work. Like I can even feel that imaginary in a way as you're saying it.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I feel like really focusing on how we express our warmth,
yeah,
right, as people, and how genuine we are. I mean, even when you and I got on this call, right, like we've never met each other, but to mm-hmm. be able to just connect and say like, I am so excited to have this conversation with you, and to, you know, and to really, again, really mean it, and we're not asking anybody to, you know, pretend or be fake or, you know, everyone has their own sort of way that they express those types of sentiments. And so you really do it in your own way. But I think that, you know, focusing on that and being, you know, really genuine and honest is one of the ways that we bring that to the therapy room and to our relationships in general.
Yes, I like that. I like that part a lot about finding, like, it's like your authentic voice of attachment, you know, of like what, how you say it or how you show it, or it makes me think of like the love languages, or, you know, of like how you're kind of showing that expression of that it doesn't have to be like, oh, you're using these statements, but how do you typically show that warmth and love to people? And how can you bring that to your clients in the client therapist relationship?
Yes, exactly. And again, everyone's going to do it differently. So there's no right or wrong. But yes, for you, you know, as a clinician to check in and just, you know, identify ways that maybe you can create more of that warmth or ways that you can be more welcoming and think about like what, you know, what you would want and how it would feel for you, right? It's a good opportunity for us to sort of assess the way that we engage in our therapeutic interactions, right? Like, what do we say when we get, I mean, now that we're in this, you know, place, pandemic place where lots of us are doing online therapy. What do we say when we get on a call with somebody? You know, when we were doing therapy in our offices, like, do I offer them a cup of tea or a glass of water? Like, do they need anything else to feel more comfortable? And so, you know, lots of different ways that we can do that.
Yes. I love that too, of it's not just words, but like finding ways to make people feel comfortable. And, I like that idea a lot too, of thinking about what makes me feel warm or welcome, or what do I see people respond to that makes them feel warm and welcome? And then how can you integrate that into like before session or preparing to go into the session, as well as in the session when you're in the moment?
Yes, definitely. And I think too, that's such a lovely thing to say too, because I think that it also gives us a really great opportunity to be regulating our nervous systems, right? Yeah. Because that to me is a practice. It's a practice of secure attachment to cultivate that warmth and to, you know, sit in it and bask in it and feel what it's like in your body to experience someone being so welcoming. That to me is, it's a beautiful opportunity to notice and ground, you know, secure attachment in your own nervous system, and then bring that into your session too.
Yes. I think of that so much with just sipping water. I'm like, I like to have lots of beverages. I have like usually like three over.
Yes, I'm the same.
Yeah. I find it really regulating, like just to have like, I have some water or tea or coffee or whatever it is. And that is part of what I feel is regulating. And it is so much harder with telehealth because I can't like offer that. But, you know, even for kids of like, you know, do you want a sip of water? Do you want to have a glass of water while you're in here? Like, that's okay. That might be that little helping regulating tool to keep in the session.
Exactly. And it really also normalizes the fact that we as humans need things.
Yeah.
Right. Like, to me, it's like, it's one of those things, especially with attachment work, you know, something that can come up, I think, you know, a lot of times, I mean, really with any of the more, you know, we would call them insecure as opposed to secure. But with any of the insecure styles, so many times, we have learned in our lives that like having needs is not okay, right? Mm-hmm. For lots of different reasons. And so lots of us learn how to shut those needs off, whether we just are not speaking them, we're feeling them on the inside, but we're not saying them, or we're putting other people's needs ahead of our own. I think there's lots of different ways that we do that. And being really honest about the fact that like having a glass of water while you're doing therapy is really helpful, because therapy can really kick some stuff up, and being able to just drink a glass of water and have a moment to regulate is good. And so again, I think we have an opportunity to be models for our clients, and acknowledging that we have needs, I think can foster more of that for them, right? Like foster this idea that like we're human beings. It's okay to have needs.
Yes. Yes. I love that, of how powerful that can be, like on a meta way, as a model in session of, you know, I think with little kids, of we both have our waters. Let's take a break and take some water and, you know, let it set for a minute. And doing that together in practice, it's so powerful. So small, but so powerful.
It's so small and so powerful. And even like what you're talking about now, it makes me think of the importance of really slowing down the process, right? Rather than moving from intervention to intervention to intervention, to sit with something like, let's have a sip of our water is really, I mean, talk about regulating for the nervous system. To be able to just slow down and be so present with having a sip of water. And here's this other person who's with you doing the same thing. We're both caring for ourselves, but we're doing that together. Again, it's not fixing. That's an intervention, right? Slowing down the process is an intervention. And so remembering that part too, if all else fails, slow down, right? And check in about like what's going on here.
Mm-hmm. And like, I feel like that taps so much into the mindfulness piece too, because like, I mean, you know, society culturally wise, we're very fast, go, go, go. And it's so like those moments, I immediately think of like, especially so many kids, there's the thing when they like sip water and they're like, like, the, you know, they're really exaggerated. And it's such a moment to be like, wow, that sounded like that felt really good to slow your body down.
Yes.
And have that cold water.
Yes. And that reflection, it's so beautiful. We're so on the same page here, because I think that that is really, that reflection in itself is something that's important for us to hear, right? Because I think what happens is, in our early lives, if we had some insecure attachment relationships going on, we don't often have a full picture of who we are in the world, right? Or that picture was somehow, it wasn't given to us in a clear way. And so having that clarity of that reflection of like, wow, you enjoyed that sip of water, right? That, I mean, that's like, oh, I did enjoy that. And then we get, it matches, right? Like our internal experience is reflected back to us. And I think that that's really key. And one of the things too, I mean, along those same lines, you know, us noticing our own internal response to what someone else is experiencing. So like, I work with lots of people who have early attachment trauma or have had, you know, really difficult childhood experiences, or even what we would call like normal. And I say that in quotes because what is normal, but like normal childhood experiences. And, you know, because there's no such thing as a perfect parent, we're all going to have challenges in our relationships. But I talk to people and, you know, we have these conversations, and I think that to be able, and of course, this sort of like disclosure is always paired with boundaries, right? Like that, I want to name that because, you know, again, we don't want to open the floodgates and be like, here's my experience of your experience. But I do think that there's something really lovely about, you know, if someone says something that's really moving, for us to say like, wow, I'm really noticing in my own body, like I'm feeling that in my heart, like, or I feel that tension in my chest. Or I'm noticing that when you say that, I feel like I want to take a big, deep breath, you know, like how, you know, and being able to say that is like for someone to hear that, right? And have that reflection of like, wow, what I said or what I experienced was really intense or really powerful, or, you know, and to make that sort of right sized in the therapy room. Like, wow, that sounds like it was really hard. I feel that in my body when I hear you talking about that. You know, and people are like, oh yeah, I guess that's true.
Yes. I love your phrasing of right sized, like making that like seen in a way, heard and felt, but then hearing someone else's experience, like it just brings that power of that space between of like, I'm not just talking to a wall or a mirror and it's just bounced back, but that it's within relationship, which means bringing you into it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because again, the key is connecting, right? Yes. If the focus is connecting, then we're sort of automatically doing some attachment work and attachment healing.
Yes. Yes. And off of that, this is actually something you mentioned before too. And I feel like we're kind of going in that direction of like that being emotionally available in the session of like, you know, responding or like bringing our, you know, emotional reflections in or sharing a piece of like, wow, I'm really feeling that too. How do we bring that in, or how do we be more emotionally available? How do we tap into that as a skill?
Mm-hmm. So I think that really tuning into our own experience of someone else's experience is important. And that's a tricky thing in therapy, right? Like that's part of what we talk about is like, how am I present for someone else knowing that I am having an internal experience? And I think a lot of us learn, especially if we're doing like community mental health where we're not getting a lot of support, we really learn how to shut down that experience. Mm-hmm. And our own internal experience is important, right? And to be emotionally available, we have to know what's going on with us. So I think that that part is important. And the empathy piece, I mean, cannot be emphasized enough. I mean, being able to really fully show up for someone's experience and hear it and be present for it without, you know, sort of like tipping over the edge and falling into it is it's a skill that I think that we, you know, that we get better with over time, as long as we're continuing to, you know, check into our emotions as we're working with clients.
Yeah. And that is so hard to do. Like, as you're saying that, I'm feeling that in like, especially when I was like a, you know, very young therapist, it was so, mm-hmm. it's so overwhelming to just be, you know, kind of facilitating in itself, let alone be tapping into what someone else is feeling and then tapping into like what I'm feeling and balancing yeah. that, like that skill, I feel like will always be a work in progress too, of, you know, every session is different, every dynamic is different, but such a hard thing to remember that is important to bring in, that it means something.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes, that's exactly right. And I think all of that being said, one of the most important things that we can do to be emotionally available for our clients is to do our own attachment work, right? It's like to yes. understand our own attachment styles, to understand mm-hmm. how we respond to certain things. I mean, if I hear something that, you know, I have a history of having some of the anxious style, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm always like, are they okay? Am I being emotionally available enough for them? Do they see that I'm here with them? Are they, right? So I'm like very attuned to them, so yeah. much so that I can lose myself in that conversation. And so part of what I've learned over time by really focusing on cultivating more secure attachment in myself is like the more grounded and centered I am, the more that they're going to feel that, right? My clients, my partner, my friends, my family, that grounding and centering for me is one of the best ways that I can show up for people. It's not about like, do they know that I'm feeling this way? Am I communicating yes. this with my body? Like, you know, it's just like, so I think that again, doing your own attachment work is so, mm-hmm. so critical. And there are wonderful resources out there for that. And I can give you a list of some of my favorite, yes. favorite books and podcasts and things like that. And, you know, there's lots of different ways that we can work on cultivating more secure attachment that is, you know, those things are going to benefit us in every single relationship in our lives.
Yeah. And that is so powerful to hear that, how, you know, if we're aware, it sounds like when you do your own work in that way, it brings that awareness of how you work within relationship. I totally relate because I have the anxious style very much. And so that the thoughts of like, you know, when you're in the moment and you're feeling like, oh, all of these things happening, it takes you away so much from what's happening. And I would imagine too, if it's like, if you're more of like avoidant style and something comes up and you're like, nope, you know, like, oh, I tend to back away from certain things, or knowing that, I feel like, is the first step. Like, because if you don't know what you don't know. So like, once you have
that's exactly
that,
right.
Yes, yeah. You can move forward of how do I bring this more into my work?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Oh, I love that example of like backing away, right? And we're like, oh, I'm not mm-hmm. going to touch that. Even though, right, like, if someone is bringing that up in session, there's probably something that needs to be worked through. But if your own avoidance stuff is coming up and you're not willing to kind of go there with them, what message does that send to them about their experience, right? And like, what we don't want to do is recreate the experience that they had in early childhood by being like, oh yeah, I'm not touching that, you know? Yes. So it's like, if we can be secure and, you know, work towards more security and say, and, you know, in ourselves, like, wow, that feels really intense to move towards. I'm curious about how you're feeling. How does it feel to you? You know, and like, again, that's that slowing down. And to me, that is being emotionally available, is being able to be present in that maybe moment of discomfort, right? Of like, oh, I feel, that feels kind of funky to me. Or like, I feel that in my body. How are you feeling? You know, that slowing down of the process is really allowing for a more curious conversation.
Yes. I love that you pointed out, like, it felt like the, not like a micro emotion, but there was like this, you know, in that, imagining that scenario of like, oh, this big thing came up and I want to avoid it. There's emotion in that big thing. Maybe it's, let's say, like anger, like a big emotion, but then there's also the discomfort, which is like, there's another one in there too, that's happening right now. And accessing that one as well as then diving into the other one is like a gold mine of things to get into. Yes. But you could, it's so easy to miss the one that's happening right now. And like that, yeah, that's in you and in finding out what you're feeling in it.
Mm-hmm. And really the truth is that if you never got into that bigger thing, but you access the discomfort of the moment, that again is an intervention, right? Yes. Like that in itself is like, gosh, I feel uncomfortable talking about this thing. What does that say? Right? Like, what does that mean about me or how I feel in relationship to this event that happened or this moment with, you know, a caregiver when I was little? What insight does that give me? So again, it's remembering, like, it's not all about like, I'm going to do this like cookie cutter clean intervention, right? It's more like, no, I'm actually going to show up as a real person and a real human being and know that my feelings are in the therapy room too. And I'm going to securely relate to those and securely relate to my client. And that is like the best thing that I can do.
Yes. Oh, I love that. That's so, so well said, how you framed that, of just like coming, showing up as a human and being in it. And to me, it also, it sounds like the way I imagine doing that is just like having like big antennas on. And it's like, okay, we'll dive into this thing, but the whole time I am here and like taking it in and seeing, like keeping your eyes out for those opportunities.
That's exactly right. And that's really what we call attunement, right? It's like, yes, we're checking into that. We have our big antennas on and we're noticing and we're paying attention. We're paying attention to body language. We're paying attention to the way that our bodies respond to something that's happening in the room, right? Like that's really, and that to me is like such a key component of healing attachment wounds.
Yes. Yes. I love that. And it's like, it's so easy to, it's not easy to do, but it's easy to implement, you know, I mean, you don't need anything. It's just about you being in the moment and like taking in data from someone else of like, okay, here's what I'm taking in. What does this mean when I bring this up?
Yes, exactly.
Yes, I love that. What are some ways that you feel therapists, and I'm thinking specifically too with children and kind of, you know, the way children, it's different from an adult of how you can kind of like bring up of like, oh, I'm noticing this big thing came up and then this other thing. What are your ideas on bringing more of those concepts in when you're working with children, even if it's like a child-led session and things are all over, or if it's therapist-led and stuff like that? How do we bring some of those into those child therapy sessions?
Yeah. So I agree with you. I think it's a little bit more nuanced, right? Yeah. In that you're not being so direct about things, but I also think in that way, it can be easier to access, right? Because really what we're wanting to do is show up as trustworthy and consistent, right? And really able to hold space for whatever comes up in that session. I really think that that's part of what we're doing as clinicians when we work with kids is we're saying, I can hold it, right? You don't have to worry. You can show up as exactly who you are, And I am here to hold that space for you, whatever that looks like. And I'm not going to judge. And it's not, you know, you can't do it wrong. I think really emphasizing that with kids when we're doing attachment work is like, you can't do it wrong. Whatever you bring up, whatever you say, however you show up is exactly right. And I think, you know, prioritizing engaging in activities that are open-ended and really allow space for expression. I think that's really big. And reflecting things back to them, right? Like we talked about earlier, like you really enjoyed that activity. I could tell because you were smiling, right? I could see the excitement in your body. How are you feeling, right? Like, what are you noticing? Kind of bringing it back to, again, that sort of like helping kids learn how to tune into their own nervous systems, right? Of like reflecting that back to them so that they get a sense and they get some language for what it is that's happening in their bodies. So I think there's lots of ways that we can do that.
Yes. Oh, I love those. And that made me think of a Robin Goebel does a lot of work. I don't know if you've heard of her, but she has a podcast and some great stuff about a lot of regulation, trauma work. And she had this great example that I think is exactly what you're talking about. That was really cool to hear of, like, that when we reflect back, we're being the mirror that they may not have had before. Like, their perspective or attachment is one way, although that might not be the full picture, or the mirror is broken. And when we come in and say simple things of, you know, you really enjoyed that, I can tell, because it's just like putting the pieces together for the full perspective.
Oh, I love that. That's exactly right. And it's, I think the other part of it too, as we were talking about repair earlier, is that it's also an opportunity to really check in to see if we're attuned with a child, right? Because if we say that, which I've done before, right? I say, you really enjoyed that. And they're like, no, I didn't. I hated that.
And I love, you know, that they'll tell you.
Oh, me too. I love, and I say, thank you so much for telling me. I'm so glad you told me. I totally read you wrong. You know, I was seeing this. Can you help me understand? You know, I'm really sorry that I said you enjoyed it. You didn't enjoy it. Let's talk about what didn't feel good for you. You know, so like, that's an opportunity for that repair and for us to really get more clear on how we can attune better to that particular child. You know, like, it gives us information. So I really like that, the mirror idea.
Yes. And kids, I feel like so much of, if I had like a nickel for every time I was like, thank you, I did get that wrong. Because kids tell you, and I feel like it's just so worth the risk to be like, you look like, even if we're wrong, because they tell us, and then there's the repair, you know, it's like, it's just so worth it to go out on the limb and say, and for those moments too, I feel like this happens, you know, so it can happen very frequently of where the, you know, a kid may be like laughing, but they're angry. And it's like, oh, I see that you're laughing. I'm a little bit confused, but you also seem angry. Or like, it helps so much with that clarity of those feelings too, that we're reflecting back.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I love how you just said that of like, it's worth the risk, because that's really, it's kind of like if I like a, I don't know, something where I was like attachment work. And the tagline was like, it's worth the risk, right? Like that's.
Yes.
It's such a perfect way to describe it, because it really is, right? Like, being able to dive into this and risk being vulnerable and risk getting it wrong, how much that opens up our relationships to deeper conversations and a greater sense of curiosity and really having the opportunity to know each other. You know, like, that to me is so, it's so critical. And to me, it's like why we're here, you know, like that's what we're doing, is we're relating. And if there's anything that I think for me, this pandemic has shown me, is how critical those relationships are, right? And how worth it is to invest in them. So I really like that. That's definitely a tagline.
Oh my gosh. I love it. It's so true. I love how you wrapped that up too, especially with the pandemic work. Like, there's, if anything that we've learned, like, our relationships are connecting with people, even still being able to connect, like, that has just been a big light, has been, I think, shone on that in this past year, coming up on a year, which feels crazy too.
I know. It's so wild to me. And here we are. We're getting through it one day at a time.
I know. We're making it step by step, one step ahead of the other.
Yes.
Well, as we start to wrap up, you mentioned resources, and I'm curious, what are some of your favorite resources for therapists who we'll definitely get to, we'll make sure to hear your podcast and your stuff, but any other books or websites or podcasts or anything that you really like for resources about this kind of material?
Yeah, absolutely. So as we're talking about doing work, attachment work with kids, Raising a Secure Child is an amazing book. I'm actually digging into it right now, like as a parent, and doing some of that circle of security work. I think that is really exciting. And it's very, I think, foundational as far as attachment work goes. And, you know, doing these sort of basic, you know, we could call them interventions, which are just really like seeing and responding appropriately to kids and their needs. I'm totally blanking on the title right now, but Diane Poole Heller's book about attachment work is so amazing. And I tend to recommend that one more than some of the other attachment books that are out in the world, because I think, and this is something I just say to lots of people all the time, is that I really think that there can be a bias against the avoidant attachment style. And I am so not here for that. I really think that we all come by our attachment styles, honestly. And so being able to hold space and have compassion for all of the styles is super important. And I think she does a beautiful job with that. There's some mainstream books that I don't recommend so much anymore, because I do think that they're actually hurtful. I think that they can really perpetuate some beliefs that are just not accurate. And so being really clear, if you're reading something and you're like, gosh, I'm really sensing a bias here, even if it's a bias that you kind of agree with, I think that's an opportunity for us to check in about like, what's coming up for me here? And like, is this really the information I need to be consuming?
Absolutely. And I mean, how much does that go so far against what we do? You know, that if we're starting to feel that or read that or see that of like, wait a second, like in nobody's fault for their attachment style. Like that is something that was, you know, it'd be like biasing a certain diagnosis over something else, which is just like, no.
That's exactly right. There's also a really great book called It Didn't Start With You. And it talks about intergenerational. Yes. Oh my God. It's so good. You know, it talks about intergenerational trauma. And that's really something when we talk about attachment work, that's so important that we cannot forget. Right? Like that to me is so, so critical.
Yeah. It's been eye-opening. I'm only about halfway through it, but just so not only like the epigenetics part of it, the like very sciencey, science grounded part of it, but then the relational element of it too, is it's been fascinating to read that. And I feel like I'm like, I've missed so much information from so many people that I've worked with because I haven't like just brought that thought, you know, to farther back in families, you know, instead of just thinking with a kiddo or parent, but bringing it even farther back.
Absolutely. Yes. I think that's really critical. And I think too, you know, one more thing I'll throw in there, because I think that we really need to be focusing on this, especially given, you know, what's happening in the world, but really also noticing and getting clear about your own sort of, racial biases, right? Because I think that's like, we could have a whole other podcast conversation about that and attachment. 100%. But really, you know, showing up for your own anti-racism work and understanding how that plays into how you view different experiences that people might have. And so I just want to throw that out there too, is like something that is incredibly important for us to be doing as clinicians.
So much. And I'm so glad that you brought that topic up too. And I think as well as like ability, you know, ableism, looking at all of these different things, there so much of that plays into, I know like a lot of music therapists, we work with lots and lots of children with different disabilities. But there's so much of this stuff that just gets glossed over because we're pigeonholed into the ability or disability. And that can happen in so many, looking at our lens, really doing that work behind it for racism, you know, ableism, all of those things. It's so important because we don't know what we're not aware of. Like, we have to widen that lens.
Exactly. And that's where that kind of comes back to what we were talking about earlier, is like the, some of the most important work you can do is the work on yourself, because that's who you're bringing to your sessions, you know?
Yes. That is one tool that's always there.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. I think of like, oh, I have a bag of castanets and, you know, a xylophone, but it's like, no, I'm always here. I'm always the one that's coming in too.
Yes, that's exactly right. And, you know, another thing too that I do want to offer is, I love, love, love writing about attachment theory. And so I have a blog and I have lots of resources on my website. Yes. So I want to offer that too, is just like something that's out there, especially because I feel like in this like pandemic life, having a 1-year-old, my brain is just not working as far as resources, but I have tons on my website.
Yes. Well, I was going to ask
online courses and things like that.
You have online courses. I was going to ask you about those, if you could share a little bit about those too.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So, you know, part of what I've been so excited about when it comes to this work is helping people access it in a way that, that feels good to them. And so I created a couple of online courses. One of them is about healing anxious attachment, and the other one is about understanding avoidant attachment. And I have such a passion for helping people get a better understanding of what it means to have avoidant attachment. And that it's not bad, right? Like, it's not something we have to go running from. And so those courses are really, the idea behind them is that you can do this work at your own pace in your own home. And it's basically like the cost of a therapy session. So if you're interested in this work and like accessing therapy to you is not possible right now, this is a way to do that. And then I also have a couple of, I call them support bundles. So it's basically like downloadable PDFs that you can reuse that have journaling prompts and meditations and things like that, that can support your work, and they're, you know, low cost. Yes. And so, really just allowing folks to have access to different resources and tools. And I just want everyone to be doing their own attachment work, because I've found personally and professionally how valuable it is.
100%. I love those. I'll make sure that there are links to those courses as well as those. I love the support bundles. That's such a beautiful thing to like, because sometimes I feel like it's like, okay, I know, now what do I do? You know, like, how do I do this? How do I continually work through this? And that sounds like such a great support for that.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, awesome. Well, also, we have your podcast as well that I'll make sure that we link to. But is there anywhere people can find you on social media, or where should they contact you if they want to reach out?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am on social media. Instagram is my favorite one. I'm an elder millennial. And so I that's where I am. I don't know how to do any of the other things.
I can do one.
Yes, exactly. Yep. So my handle on there is @heirloomcounseling. Mm-hmm. Heirloom Counseling is the name of my practice. And then I also have a website, again, with a blog and lots of information on there. And that's heirloomcounseling.com.
Super. And I'll put a link to Here to Heal, your podcast too, because it's amazing.
Thank you.
So wonderful. This has been, Elizabeth, just so great, of so much stuff, and just so truly lovely talking with you. And I'm just so thankful that you came on and shared your wisdom and your passion with us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Kate. I love this conversation. I'm so excited about having these dialogues with you.
All right. I hope you all enjoyed that episode with Elizabeth. Definitely check out her resources, her books, recommendations, her website, her podcast. I binged I must have been like 5 or 6 of her episodes. The first time I found the podcast, I was on a walk and I was like, what? This is amazing. So definitely go check her out and give her some support. She's really, really great and just has so much wonderful information to share. Also, just as a heads up, the Umbrella community is only open for a few more days before we shut our doors for another 6 months. The Umbrella community is an online community to support your knowledge of child mental health, child counseling skills, trauma-informed care, and bridging music with other creative arts. If you're a music therapist or music educator, a music clinician, and you like this podcast, then you'd probably love the community. It's probably one of my favorite things is the community support, is we really get to come together and lean on each other, and we're so much stronger together with all of the ideas we come up with. But if you've ever felt like you need support with child-specific verbal skills, supporting the mental health of children of all abilities, if you've wondered how to expand your music interventions and activities to include other creative arts, if you're curious about relational approaches and how to lean on the relationship within your therapy or within your activities as well, this is a really great place to do that. We get... in the community, you get a monthly email with intervention ideas, informational downloads, implementation videos, visuals, a bunch of goodies every month. Also, there's a monthly group consult call that you can attend live or you can watch it later. There are opportunities for individual 30-minute consultations throughout the year, which is really awesome. I love those. You get access to our resource archive. So there's just tons of worksheets, videos, downloads, interventions, visuals, everything, you name it, that's in kind of our resource archive that you get access to as soon as you become a member. There's a private Facebook group as well to support your connections with your other community members, ask questions, and engage in discussions. And then there's also steep discounts on any other courses, podcast bundles, consultation packages, anything in our shop you get steep discounts on, like 50%, usually 50% discounts on all of that stuff. So it's a great place to, if you feel like you need more, if it's intervention ideas to expand your kind of creative skill set in session, this is a place where you can get that. If it's where you really want to learn how to build those child-specific counseling skills, this is a place to do that as well. And the best part is you can earn 15 CMTE credits as a music therapist. So lots and lots of reasons to join. It is just one of my favorite things to do. I think when I created this podcast, I definitely wanted a community element to it, and I never knew it would take this form in this type of community. And it is, and it's amazing, and I'm just so thankful that I get to be a part of it. So anytime you're curious, if you have any questions about it, feel free to reach out. And again, always feel free to reach out, kate@creativetherapyumbrella.com. I would love to hear from you, so always feel free to connect. I'm sending you lots of warm wishes and maybe even cooler wishes as we kind of get a taste of spring. We are here up in Maine, but it'll probably snow again soon. So either way, sending you lots of warm or cool thoughts, whatever it is that you need, and looking forward to the next episode, and be creative.